Yeah, so okay, so like I said, this was what when I was on the plane, I was reading this this article by Itamar Rosenzweig, Rabbi Doctor,
Wait, from YU?
from YU.
I know that guy.
There you
Not
go.
personally. We hang out with him sometimes.
Yeah, so oh right, Philly. Right, so we're the same year in Yeshiva,
How'd you
NYU.
know about Philly? Philly?
So he wrote an excellent
It's
article
crazy.
on
No,
the
I
sugya at the
don't know
bottom
anything about Philly.
of Mem Tenem and
Where's
Aleph.
the mark?
So the Gemara there, if for anyone who remember when we were talking in the Gadot this year, launches into a long discussion of how we view an Amaretz. It starts with halachic sugyot, and then it quickly gets into the crazy
So, what's an
Agadotas
Amaretz
of
Moses?
well, that's the question. The sugya. Normally, it means a non-learned person. Whether that's what it means in the sugya is unclear, right? Because by the time you get to Mem Tenem and Bet, who was in Agadotas? No, none of you were in?
I
Okay.
should be there.
So the Gemara by Mem Tenem and Bet goes crazy when it starts saying, yes, and Amaretz. You can stab on Yom Kippur that falls on Shabbos, and the Talmidim say, how could you say such a thing? Why wouldn't you say shech them? Why
What?
would you say stab? He says, no, if you shech them, that would need a bracha. That's why you stab them, so you don't need a bracha. And
What
then
is
it's like, and
this?
you're allowed to rip them apart from the like a fish, right? Like it's a very weird Gemara. But before we get to that, I got it. That starts with this innocuous enough sounding Gemara on Mem Tet Amud Aleph, which is about what seudot a Talmid Chacham should attend, right? Right now, why is it even getting to this? So it's really backhanded. So the Mishnah, the second Mishnah on Mem Tenem and Aleph says that Holech l'shchodet pischo v'lamulet bino v'lachol sudat eres v'mit chamav v'nizkar sheish l'chametz b'toch beito im yachol l'achzor l'va'er. Right, so if you're going to shech the Karban Pesach or get a Brit Milah for your son or to eat at a Sudat Erusin, right, the meal of a wedding, and then you remember that you have chametz in your house, so if you can get back to your house and actually destroy the chametz, then you should do that. And if not, then you just suffice with bittul, right, with nullification in your heart, right? So commenting on that, if you skip down to the Gemara says, the Mishnah says that if you're going to have a sudat erusin, right, this wedding meal, so then you don't have to go back. You can just suffice with bittul. But then we have another statement in a Braita, which says that if you're going to this wedding meal, you do have to return. So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yochanan lo kasha. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbi Yossi. It depends. It's a machloket. D'tanya sudat erusin reshut. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Amar mitzvah. The assumption, the Gemara says, is that if the meal you're going to is a mitzvah, then you're allowed to keep going to the meal. You don't have to turn back. And you can just suffice with bittul. But if it's not a mitzvah, then you have to turn back and destroy the chametz actively. So why does the Mishnah say that you don't have to go back? And the Braita says you do have to go back because it's a machloket, whether a wedding meal, and again, sudas erusin,
Well, that's
it's
what
really
I'm
the first
asking.
stage of the marriage, whether it's a mitzvah or not. Okay. The Gemara says, wait a second. But then Rav Chisda said that's not really true because they only argue about the second feast that you would make after a betrothal. Aval suda rishon and divrei hakol mitzvah. But the first initial meal, everyone agrees, is a mitzvah.
You can't go back.
So then Gemara says, no, afilu teva ha Rabbi Yehuda. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, v'lo kasha, ha v'suda rishon, ha v'suda shniyah. Very easy. It depends on whether it is the first meal or the second meal. Okay. Now, once the Gemara is now talking about mitzvah meals, it says, okay, but is every wedding meal a mitzvah? So then the Gemara says, Tanya Rav Yossi, ani lo shamati ela sudat erusin. Only the meal around erusin, the first stage of marriage, is a mitzvah. Avo lo sivlo note, which was basically meals that would be sent as presents between in like the courting period, right? Like leading up to the wedding, you would send.
You would go on a date.
No, this was no, no, no. You would send presents to the to your betrothed, right? You would right, so you'd send meals. That's not what we're talking about. I'm Rabbi Lo Rabbi Yossi, Ani Shamati Sudaters, and Viz Sivlo Note. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, even Sivlo Note is a mitzvah. Okay. And now the Gemara says, but let's be careful. Tanya. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol su'uda she'ena shel mitzvah, ein talmid chacham rashai lehanot mimena. Any meal which is not a mitzvah. Now already there's an ambiguity there, which is it neutral or is it negative, right? Meaning it's not a mitzvah, but does that simply mean it's not a mitzvah and it's just neutral, or it's not a mitzvah, meaning it's like, you know, it's problematic. But that type of meal, a Talmud Chacham is not allowed to benefit from. Kigon mai, like what's an example of that? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kigon bat kohen li Yisrael. It's like the daughter of a kohen marrying a non-kohen. Uvat Talmud Chacham la Amaretz. And this daughter of a Talmud Chacham to an Amaretz. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan said that Bat Kohen li Yisrael ein zivugan ole yafe. That when a Bat Kohen marries a non-Kohen, a Yisrael, their match won't work out.
Whoa.
And the word says, Maihi, what is it? Amar Rabbi o Almana o Grusha o Zera ein la. And what will happen? Either she'll be widowed, divorced, or they won't have children.
Oh my
That's
God.
It. Madina dana ko, or if you want it more succinctly, it then quotes another brayta, kovra o kovarto, either she buries him or he will bury her.
Right,
backwards. O meviato lide aniyut, meaning young. Right? Or they will be poor. Right? The Gemara says, Eini vahamar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, harote shi itazer yidbak bezaro shel aron. Rabbi Yochanan said, wait a second. Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say that if you want to become rich, you should marry someone from the family of Aaron, mean marry a bat kohen? So, because culture came to Torah v'kuhuna, tam asartan, because now the Torah plus kahuna will make you rich, meshartan. Lo kasha, but tamar chacham ab amaretz. That's a tamar chacham, that's an amaretz. And the Gemara goes on and tells stories that Rabbi Yeshua married a bat kohen and he became ill. And he said, aha, it must be that Aaron doesn't want me to be marrying his descendants, which was an example of it working out badly. Rav Idi Bar Oven married a bat kohen, and he had two children. Smicha.
How many families became kohanim originally?
Well, it would encourage either people to marry kohanim to marry kohanim, or for kohanim to marry tamid chachamim.
If you have enough, and you won't get a critical mass.
I'm just saying at the beginning, when it's just there aren't that many kohanim, it would lead to intermarriage. No.
I mean, by intermarriage, you mean
intramarriage? Bad gene pool.
But that was most of history.
Is it a bottleneck?
Look, when you had a shtetl of like five families, the chances that you didn't marry someone who was a... Look, we have these funny tshuvot from the medieval period where people were like, we can't get married where we live. Not because gene pool, but because there is nobody in our entire city who isn't a close enough relative to everybody else to be kasher leidos. So you can't, there are no Aiden.
Oh.
Everyone, we're all, you know. So even if, like, we could get married, because first cousins can marry halachically, but you can't be witnesses. So there's nobody in our whole city, because, like, you have five families, and they're all, you know. And they're all,
Wow.
Yeah, so, like, that is the reality of some of these things. So, I mean, I get the gene pool problem, but, like, realistically... You are spoiled.
As long as
you are spoiled, man.
All the rich families in medieval Europe always intermarried, and you can see in the picture.
Well, yeah, wasn't the queen and Prince Philip, what were they? They were cousins of some sort, right?
Yeah.
What?
From
a halachic perspective, sure. But on the genetic point, yes.
I think Franklin Roosevelt's wife was his second cousin.
I think it was second cousin, yeah. I mean, second cousin's already pretty diluted, but...
First
cousin's is not so diluted, but yeah. But on a halachic level, it's fine. Yes.
On a halachic level, you can marry your niece, but not your aunt.
Yes.
Wait.
What? You can...
But that's the same relation.
No, it's not.
You
can marry your brother or sister's daughter, but you cannot marry your father's sister or mother's sister.
Okay, but let's talk about.
But your brother's son couldn't marry your sister.
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
But your brother's son.
Okay, so like I said, I was very happy to have this article with me while I was on the plane, because I could read something that was very in depth and long and would take Mm-hmm. You know. So I like got through this article. I got through a very long book on the history of Kiryat Yoel. Kiryas Yoel.
How long was this plane?
Not so. It's England. 5 hours.
So I read 8 books.
You know, read a book, read an article, solved cancer.
Yeah, did not do that one.
Did that a while ago.
Was a very interesting book, though, on the history of Kiryas Yoel.
That's right. History what?
Kiryas Yoel. Like the it's a separate legal entity that was incorporated as a village by Satmar Hasidim outside Muncie.
Whoa.
And it's had like several Supreme Court cases going there, and you know it has a very interesting history.
That is very interesting.
Yes.
What are the Supreme Courts about?
Because they set up their own public school system, but it only serves the people in Kiryat Yoel, since they're all
Hasidim,
right? So it's secular, even though everyone there is Satmar, and like it's a lot of religion and state things going on there. Because it started with whether the government was allowed to provide services for like special education within the schools, and if it wasn't, could you set up your own school district, and things like that. And then the courts were eventually brought in to fight to settle disputes between the different factions there, because wow. You know there were the Satmar Hasidim that followed the. After the Satmar Rebbe died.
Right.
So there was, right.
His son and there was...
No, he didn't have any children. That was the problem.
Oh, was it right, his two main students?
No, it was his wife who kept her clan and then his great-nephew.
Whoa.
Her nephew? Great-nephew?
Wait, so the secular courts had to sort that out?
Well, because they started fighting over... Because remember, since the city was basically run by people who were loyalists to the Rebbe, they were using their power They were using their political power to like sanction the other side's shuls and not give and slapping them with like zoning violations and stuff like that. So there's right. So things got very very messy.
Yeah, that's not so messy. Yeah.
The Satmar Mafia.
Anyways, it's very interesting, right? Fascinating history. So that was part of it, but part of my plane ride was reading this article. Okay, but here's the major question, right? So the Gemara says that. If you have the marriage of a Talmud Chacham, right, of an Amaretz to a Bat Kohen, or a Talmud Chacham to an Amaretz, yeah, so their marriage isn't going to work out, and a Talmud Chacham isn't allowed to participate in the meal.
What if the Talmud Chacham marries a Bat Kohen who isn't
the assumption is that's the case, right? You're not dealing with an assumption. The woman herself is educated in this case.
Well, yeah, but like you wouldn't assume that she's like has fallen on Amharic status.
Well, the question is, what does Amharic mean in this context, which is complicated, right?
Because why can you rend them apart on Shabbos?
Right. Well, that's part of it. No, different things. No. Those are two separate statements. It's ripping apart. It has nothing to do with Shabbos. Then there was Shabbos and Yom Kippur, which was stabbing. Different Gemara.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's a very weird Gemara, and if you want to understand it, you can come back to Agada Share on Thursday, where we will continue our analysis of this Gemara.
Rip apart an Amharic.
I mean, I don't know if you can physically do it, but the Gemara says so. Yes. Whatever it means. So,
I'm going to learn something.
Right. So the question you got to deal with here, right? So this is the Lumdus question you got to deal with, which is, right, what is the Gemara saying? What is the problem with a Talmud Chacham participating in this marriage of a Bat Kohen to an Amaretz, of a Talmud Chacham to Amaretz? So what's the problem, right? What's the conceptual problem you have to deal with? So first you have to deal with what is this, right, what is the nature of such a prohibition of participating? Right, but the second is, what is, seems to be the assumption here? That this meal is not a Suda Shel Mitzvah.
These the marriage
right?
packages?
But what's the problem? Why is that problematic? Why is that a problematic thesis?
By definition.
Very good. Is that you would have said that by definition, that even if the marriage, as long as the marriage is not formally prohibited.
Then it's no different than anything. Right?
Then maybe it's not an ideal marriage. But how is the meal not a Suda Mitzvah? Meaning whether you think like the Rush, that marriage itself is a mitzvah. Sorry, whether you think like the Rambam, that marriage itself is a mitzvah, or like the Rush, that was a bad mistake, right? Or the Rush, that it's not, right? But
the suit is still a mitzvah.
But, okay, as he points out, Kiddushin isn't technically a prerequisite for Puravu, but still, like, somehow, actually, it's linked into the mitzvah of Puravu, of procreation, right? Again, the Rosh says it's not technically, because technically you can fulfill it without. Fine, the Ron, I mean, technically you could fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu even without marriage, right? Oh, maybe not beheter, but you would fulfill the mitzvah. But whether you think that itself it's a mitzvah or it's somehow linked to Puravu, I mean, the Rosh denies that also, but whatever, it's somehow valuable. And how is that marriage of the value of marriage and the fact that a meal around marriage is a mitzvah, how does that get negated by a marriage not being like the ideal marriage? Meaning it's not like it's a mamzer getting married, where it's usher for a mamzer to marry a regular Jew, right? Or a kohen marrying a grusha, right? A divorcee or something like that, which is usher. Where there you would say, look, this marriage is not sanctioned. But this, there's nothing, right? It sounds a lot less formal. So the question is, how is this not a mitzvah? So you need to deal with these two questions, right? Why can't a Talmud Chacham be involved in non-mitzvah meals? And the second is, what does it mean that this is not a mitzvah meal, right? That's going to be part. So that's part of the question. The background here is, what does a Talmud Chacham mean here? What does Namaretz mean here? But that is more what I'm dealing with on Thursday. So if you want to come back for that, you can see, right? Because yes, if you were just dealing with normally what we mean by Maritz, which is an uneducated person, you would assume that, you know, you can't rip them apart like a fish. That's 7:30. Yeah. Okay. So he said. So first, as the first question, which is, what is the nature of the issur of not participating, in this meal? So one possibility is to say that it's essentially a Hilchot Deot question. It's like proper etiquette, kavod Talmud Chacham. Like, Talmud Chacham have to hold themselves to certain standards, and participating in a meal, which is celebrating a questionable situation. Again, two steps here, right? So first is, what is the problem of participating in the meal? The second is, why is this meal considered problematic, right? So the first question is, why can a Talmud Chacham not be involved in such a meal? So one possibility is just like, this is an etiquette question, right? Etiquette in general, etiquette of a Talmud Chacham. I mean, this seems to be, and again, I'm basically taking you through the article here, though if you want to read the whole thing, there's a lot more in it. But this seems to be the position of the Rambam, right? So the Rambam quotes it as follows. Kisha chacham ochel ma'at zera uilo lo yochlenu elu veital shulchano, that when a Talmud Chacham eats, he should eat only a little bit, what he is necessary, right? A Talmud Chacham shouldn't be a glutton. And when he eats, he should eat at home, right? In a private setting, lo yochel bechanut, you don't eat in the store, velo beshuk, or out in the marketplace, el mivnei tzarach gadol, kedei shelo yitganem b'fnei abriyot, so that you don't become disgusting in the eyes of people. Right, so this is clearly, this halacha starts off with just the type of life that a Talmud Chacham should live. And then he continues, v'lo yochal etzel amei ha'aretz, right, and don't eat by, right, by an aretz, v'lo oltan ha'shulchal, no, hamleim, ki v'tsua, not those tables, meaning of the aretz, which are ki'ilu, filled with vomit and excrement. Below, yes, that's, we have very high opinions of their meals. Below yarbes yishtotav v'chol magam v'ilim chachamim, and don't eat too much to begin with, even with chachamim. Below yochal b'sunashit v'em kibbutz harbeh, and not, don't eat at meals which are huge gatherings of people. V'ein ra'ui lo l'chol el b'sud shel mitzvah, and it's proper that you only eat a suda of mitzvah. Kagon sudat erusin nisuin, like a marriage one, the two stages of marriage. So for example, when a Talmud Chacham marries the daughter of a Talmud Chacham, and the real Chassidim wouldn't even eat by any meal that wasn't their own. Like, they wouldn't benefit from anybody, they wouldn't eat at other people's houses. What? Who says they're not kashrus? See, you're jumping. The Rambam's saying no. Like, a Talmud Chacham is supposed to be very dignified, and you're a little bit, you know, you're above. The Talmud Chacham's a little bit, you know, above, a little bit separate. Yeah.
Is that an actual, like, halacha that you have to trust other people's kashrus?
What do you mean?
I don't know. Is that a
When you go to eat at someone's house,
are you aware of the fact that you added a word there that confused me a little bit. Oh, is there halacha that you can trust, or that you? What do you mean a mitzvah to trust?
Are you allowed to say like I don't trust or cautious to someone, even though they tell you that it's 100% kosher and they're Jewish?
Why are you saying you don't trust them?
Let's just say I don't trust anyone except for myself. It's not a halachic reason.
So, it's a little bit of a complicated sugya nemonos. It happens to be what I'm going to do in my share at some point in the next few days or weeks. Because one of the main sugyas is on Daf Daled. I'm in Tzachim. In general, a Torah observant person is trustworthy. Right, there are a lot of qualifiers on that. But whether you're allowed to not trust someone, well, it depends why you're not trusting them, meaning. Right, so it's not so simple. I mean, you know, that would come to some of the issues you talked about with Rai Sklar yesterday, of URA potentially. Cool. Right, I don't know how he translated it, but it's something like religious presumptuousness or something like that.
I said the term to some like writer friends of mine, and now one of my friends is using it as the name of his religion and God. Yehora.
Okay.
He's calling God
okay. So again, so the first question that you want to ask on this sugya is why isn't a Talmud Chacham supposed to participate in this type of meal? So again, the first possibility is that this is just among those halachot of the etiquette of or the etiquette of a Talmud Chacham. However, right, this seems a little bit weak in the sugya, right? Because the sugya does seem to point to something bigger, right? That there's something problematic about this marriage, right? For the Rambam, it's just like a Talmud Chacham shouldn't be there because like a Talmud Chacham holds himself to higher etiquette, but it sort of escapes the problem with the marriage itself. Whereas the sugya does seem to right. And furthermore, right, now there are some other problems there that, right, within the Rambam, what would you say about a Bas Kohen to a, right, now the Rambam Dafka leaves out the case of a Bat Yisrael to a Kohen, right, which is further, right, sort of an odd omission there, right, he focuses on the Amar Talmud Chacham cases, where there are other things going on there, furthermore, as the Gesa Mishnah points out, it sounds like in the Gemara that the problem is specifically a Bat Talmud Chacham Tama Aretz, right? Why? Because there's some gap, right? They're like going down from their level, right? Yordim Migdula Tam. But what's the simple implication of the Gemara? Would it be a Sudat Mitzvah of an Am Aretz married a Bat Am Aretz? Yeah, right? Like in the Gemara, it seems to be that this wedding is particularly problematic because the Bat Kohen to an Am Aretz or the Talmud Chacham to a Bat Am Aretz, that's problematic. But if it was two Am Haaretz, it'd be fine. Except in the Rambam's context, where his focus is on the Talmud Chacham, like maintaining, yeah, like that seems to be at some level worse. I mean, the marriage maybe is less problematic, right? But if you're focusing on the atmosphere that Talmud Chacham should be in, you would think that a atmosphere in which, you know, everybody present is just, there are amaratzim on both sides, right? So that would be, right? Like, that would be more problematic, and yet it seems clear in the Gemara that it's less problematic, right? So if it's just about the demeanor of a Talmud Chacham, you would think that a totally, right, you would say, like, maybe the marriage is more problematic when there's a gap. But again, in terms of the Su'udah, right, where is the Talmud Chacham more likely to have a proper atmosphere when there's a Talmud Chacham marrying an Amaretz, right? And he gets put at the rabbi table where half the guests are from the Talmud Chacham side of the marriage, right? Or where both sides are Amaretz and there's nobody on either side. That right? Again, so... which points in the direction that this problem might not just be about the demeanor of a Talmud Chacham, but it's that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't be involved in this marriage in this Suda, because the Suda, the mitzvah component of the Suda is reflective of the mitzvah of the marriage. And in some way, when you have these problematic unions, the marriage itself takes on that hue. And the Meiri says this very explicitly, and he says, Kol Suda Shena Shel Mitzvah, any Suda that is not of a mitzvah, Ein Talmud Chacham Rashai Leonot Mimena, Talmud Chacham can't benefit from it, V'yei Suda Erizin Shena Shel Mitzvah, and there are marriage meals that are not mitzvot, Kigon, Bat Talmud Chacham Amaretz, Bat Kohen Afal B'Shena Talmud Chacham Yisrael Amaretz, V'derech Ha'ara. And then we say, once we're talking about that, then we say that Nibubahem Shein Ziv Gomola Yafe, that their marriage won't come out well, and stuff like that. So the Meiri seems to say, and you have this as well in the Mordechai, that the meal itself is not a mitzvah. Now this is a bit of a problem. Like, what's the problem saying it's not a mitzvah? Well, they're getting married. Isn't that itself a mitzvah or a conduit to pervu, which is a mitzvah? Meaning the fact that it's not like the ideal marriage, how does that make it
not
a mitzvah? So now the Mordechai seems to also think the problem is the meal, but he says something even more shocking. And the Mordechai says that he asked the Maharam, and he said, how is it that nowadays we eat at such meals of a bat kohen to Yisrael or a bat talmid chacham haaretz? And the Maharam said, no problem, because nowadays at weddings we sing Shirot V'Tishbachot LaKadosh Baruch Hu. We sing songs of praise to God, and that makes it a Suda's mitzvah.
Wow.
So he agrees that it's not a mitzvah.
Right now, for him, it's quite clear that on the first question, what is the nature of the prohibition?
But
he agrees with Meiri, right? That the problem isn't just the demeanor of a Talmud Chacham, but that there's some like formal isser or a quasi-formal isser for a Talmud Chacham to participate in a non-mitzvah meal. However, very different than Meiri. The Meiri says, yes, this marriage is somehow not a mitzvah. The Mordechai seems to be, according to Maharam, seems to be much more open to the fact that it's not the marriage per se, but it's like, I don't know, this atmosphere when a Talmud Chacham and Amar, it's improperly married, just not one of the mitzvah. So it's not because the marriage is problematic, because you could just solve the problem by singing songs of praise to God, which, right?
It can't never be. It just doesn't.
Correct, right? The Meiri seems to go much more fundamental and say, this marriage is problematic, where the Mordechai says, on the first question, which is why can a Talmud Chacham participate, it's because there's a problem of participating in non-mitzvah meals. But on the question of what makes this problematic, as opposed to saying the marriage is like fundamental and therefore this meal is irredeemable, he is like, well, no, it's just sort of lacking.
I was going to say,
right?
Yeah.
It's lacking, and therefore you could fill it in if the marriage itself doesn't provide enough simchas shel mitzvah, so then provide it through shirat v'tishbachot. So on the one hand, he does say there's something lacking in the marriage that removes some level of mitzvah, but on the other hand, it's not like it's problematic. Right? The Meiri seems it's problematic, where for the Mordechai and the Maharam, it's like lacking, right? Less than problematic, it is. It's lacking.
Can it just be that, like, the opinion of the Mordechai, at least, is that, like, the removal of the, like, kadosh, or the thing that makes the marriage a mitzvah, or the wedding meal a mitzvah, is just, like, to dissuade them from doing it, just to show that it's not perfect? Like, it's not an aveira.
Okay, good. So hold that thought for just one second, right? But, again, what you're getting to is the major question here, right? And this is, so the major conceptual question here is, okay, there's the first question, which is, what is the problem with the Talmud Chacham participating in the meal? One possibility is it's just part of the demeanor that Talmud Chacham is supposed to have. And the other possibility is that no, like there's a quasi-halachic rule that a Talmud Chacham can't participate in a non-mitzvah or a negative meal. And this, either because it's lacking some sort of mitzvah, or it's actually negative, which seems to be a difference between the Mordechai and the Meiri at some level, he can't participate. But the major question is, as many problems there are in the Rambam at least can acknowledge this is a mitzvah. Right? Like, he can acknowledge that Kiddushin is still a mitzvah, and it's a mitzvah. But, like, a Talmud Chacham has to be very careful, because the Talmud Chacham can't eat in public. Right? You're not going to say that there's an Aveira to eat in public, because the Talmud Chacham has to hold himself differently. So you, for the Rambam, as much as that's a problem in the Sugya, at least on this count, he could say, listen, yes, there's a mitzvah, the mitzvah of Kiddushin, but still, the fact that there's anything questionable about this union, even though it's still a mitzvah, means that the Talmud Chacham just shouldn't put a stamp of approval on it, shouldn't be present. That's not so crazy on that plane. But how, according to the Meiri, could you come to the conclusion that Kiddushin, which is either itself a mitzvah or at least participates in the mitzvah purvu, how is it possible that simply the fact that you have like a non-ideal union, which again is not forbidden,
right? Is he saying that he's just saying what, it doesn't exist here? There's no Kiddushin on this?
No, so there is Kiddushin. That's the thing. There is Kiddushin, and yet it's not a suited mitzvah because some of the mitzvah of the marriage is lacking. But the major question you have to ask, answer for the Meiri is how, right? Is what happened here? How could it be that this marriage is somehow not a mitzvah? So you tell me conceptually, right? How would you even, right? What could you do to explain?
What's the mitzvah of marriage?
Okay, right, so what are you going to have to do, right? So the question you have to ask is, what is the nature of the mitzvah, right? And what is it about this union, or specifically, what is it about the idea that when you get married, you should get married to the right person, not just a permitted person, but the right person? What does that do? What does that reflect? How does that change the nature of the mitzvah, right? That's really the conceptual question.
Oh, well, just on that idea, it makes it seem like the idea of the mitzvah is inherent in the mitzvah is that you have to get married to the right person.
Ah, very good. Right, mitzvah, so that, and that's exactly what this article is basically setting out to prove, wow, is that if you want to take the most radical way of reading this, mm-hmm, right, that's the conclusion you have to come to, is that what this type of argument seems to point to is that marriage isn't just to get, that the mitzvah of marriage isn't just to get married.
It's to find the right person.
But it's to get married to the right person. Wow. And if you reformulate Kiddushin in that way, then
that's fascinating. That's a really interesting take,
right? Oh, good. So now let's, like I said, this is why it was fun for me to sit on the plane and just go through this.
Yeah.
So yeah,
this is a very
good one. Okay. So where would we get it? So first, you have to know that there's a few other statements in the Gemara you'd have to take into account. So Kedushin Daf Ayin, the Gemara says that Amar Rabba Bar Ada Vabarav Ada Vamri La Amar of Sela Amar of Humnuna Kolanosi Isha Shena Hugenet Lo. Anyone who marries a woman who's not proper for him, Eliyahu kofto, v'akadosh baruch hu rotso. Eliyahu ties you down and God beats you. Netanya, al kulam Eliyahu kotev, v'akadosh baruch hu kotev, and on everything Eliyahu writes and God signs, and he says, oilo leposel et zara, woe to him who invalidates his children, upogim et mishgachto, and is making a blemish in his family, v'nosi isha sheino genet lo, and is marrying a woman who's improper for him, Eliyahu kofto v'akadosh baruch hu rotso. And then the Gemara continues, on Amud Bet, Amar Rav Avin Barav Ada Amarav, kolonosi isha sheino genet lo, anyone who marries a woman that's not proper to you, kisha kadosh baruch hu masher shchinato, meir al kol shvatim, when God brings his divine presence down and testifies about all the tribes, they ain't made a love. He won't testify about you. Because God, there's only Eidut for Israel when you are the Shiftei Ka. Yes, or the Gemara in Ketubot on Chavchet Amud Bet, which tells this wonderful little, it's not a story exactly, it's a practice. There we go. A practice. That the Gemara is talking about a term called kitzatza. And the Gemara says, kitzat kitzatza. What is kitzatza? So that's echad min ha'achin shenasa isha sheino genet lo. When a brother would marry a wife who was not fitting for him, ban b'nei mishpacha, the family members would come, umvi'en chavit melea perot, and bring a barrel full of fruit, v'shovrin ato b'emtza rechava, and they would shatter it in the middle of the public square, the Omrim, and they would yell out and say, Achenu Beit Yisrael Shemu, Jews, listen, Achenu Ploni, our brother, Nasa Isha Sheno Genelo, married someone that isn't worthy of him, Umityarem Anu Shema Yit Arev Zaro Bizareno, and we're worried that his children should be mixed in our children, Bo Kulahem Dugmal Darot, so to come, take the fruit to as a public statement for the generations, Shlo Yitarev Zaro Bizareno, that our children should not mix. And then a child, if he sees this as a child when he's adult, he's allowed to testify that this happened to tell everyone, yes, that person married him properly, right? So again, probably or it's purvu, right? Like the
fruit, yeah.
I don't know.
That's awesome. That's so
cool. Are
you recording all this, right?
Yes. So the
I need to remember this.
Okay. Now, so what in these Gemaras, what does it mean in Isha Shena Hogenet Lo? Right? What does it mean? Right? So Rashi says, Psulolo. Rashi sort of limits the whole Suga and says it's a woman who's invalid to you. Like you're not allowed to get married. Well, probably not even that, or whatever, or a mamzer, or a bat kohen lamara, like a, sorry, a bat kohen to a, sorry, a kohen to a grusha, whatever, a psula, right? You're right? In Isra Asay. And the Rush says the same thing. Now, if, oh good. So if that's the case, on the one hand, it solves the problem. Because the reason you're making such a big scene in all these sugyot is because this is someone that's usser. And that's why God is so angry, and that's, what's the problem? Right, what's the problem? So the, he just says, as the Maharshal just says, that's obvious, right? I mean, like, that's just obvious. Meaning, A, it's obvious. Second of all, he adds that if it's really usser, so why are you going out there screaming in public and shattering barrels of fruit? What should you be doing?
Going to court.
Stopping them,
yeah.
Right? There are coercive powers we have in halakha.
Systems exist that.
Yeah, if he's going to marry a mamzer, so start beating him until he stops. Right? Like, I understand. What are you doing? What are you? Right? You can beat him. You can, right? You can force him. So instead of forcing him, you're breaking a barrel of pomegranates in the town square. I mean, come on. Right? So, therefore, the Marshal, the Bnei Yeshua say, no. It can't be that. So if it's not that, then what is it? So you could just go down half a step. Half a step. Now, what's half a step? So it could be a family of Suffolk, where, like, that's the recruiting schedule that I'm just getting everyone's updates of where they are. It's fine. It means Regensburg is at MIMO.
Oh.
That's all.
DG, do you call that, or that's just you put
that's what he put on it. We're all shared on the same calendar.
Oh, very cool.
Yes. I mean, it thinks that he's there now, but that's because I'm on an American, like, I'm on an Israeli clock. He's going in seven hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So you could just take it as like a minus, which is like, yes, it must be that the problem here is like an isser, but if it was really usser, then you would coerce him. So instead, what you do is it's like a family that might have a puzzle in it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not somebody that you know is puzzle, but it's a family that there might be a real, right? A real halachic. Mm-hmm. Invalidation, right? And this comes up in several of Mafarshim. We're not there yet, right? So now, if that's the case, if you think that the sugyot of Isha Sheino Hogenet Lo are either about someone who's actually usser, or even suffik usser, right? So then, does that have anything to do with our sugya?
Not really, because the whole point is
nothing, right? That has nothing to do with our sugya, because in our sugya, we're not dealing with something like that.
With relationships that halachically should be totally
correct, fine. Right? In our sugya, that's not it. So that sugya, where God is beating you with Eliyahu and whatever, right? That's someone you're not allowed to marry, or you might not be allowed to marry, but like you're not allowed to marry. It's a mamzer, a suffik mamzer, a suffik grusha, this, that, whatever, right? But that's not our sugya, where they're all kosher. It's just I'm aretz, palnachacha, bat kohen, I'm aretz. In which case, the sugyas are not related. However, the Tashbates and others say, no. Isha Eina Hogenet there is a Balavera, right? Someone who's sinful. Mishamashto Nida, right? And might therefore they might end up sleeping together once they're married, when she's a nida, because you're marrying someone who's just not a good person, who doesn't keep halacha, who doesn't, right? And there, now, so according to the Taj Bates, what are those sugyas about?
What are what sugyas about?
So the sugyas of Isha Eino, She'eino Hogenet, right? A woman who's not proper for you, they're not about someone where the marriage itself is problematic.
Where the person is problematic.
Right? It's where there's something else going on that makes this marriage, right, not, right? Ah. But
oh yeah, they're still
good. But so the Taj Bates has started the path towards saying that this is something different, but not fully, because what is he saying? The marriage itself is not problematic, but why is it Eino Hogenet?
Because she's not a good person to marry.
Because not just not a good person. Because there are formal isurim involved. It's just, it's not that the formal isur isn't in the marriage itself.
Oh, so they might lead
but it's going to lead to an isur. Right? Now, could you read the Talmud, the Taj Bates into our sugya?
I feel like you could.
You could.
Yeah.
If you wanted to, right, you could read into our sugya because you could say that, yeah, the problem with the Talmud Chacham marrying Amaretz is that
it could lead to Avera.
Right, it could lead to Avera. The problem, that, the reason you want to be with
Wait, but then why Bat Kohen and Yisrael? What Avera would that lead to?
What?
The Bat Kohen to Yisrael, that doesn't lead to any Averas. Right?
Right, now, but it doesn't solve everything, correct?
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't solve everything, right? Because, again, if it was about that, then it would be to marry an Amaretz ever. Someone's not going to keep halacha, but the fact that our sugya
it's
just
the daughter of a
Kohen. Right, right. It's the Talmud Chacham to it or the Bat Kohen, right? Yeah. That already indicates that it's not. But if you wanted to, right? Now, again, I'm not going to go through everything in the article, but I'll skip around here a little bit. But you could, if you wanted to sort of read this into the sugya. But you could take it one step farther and to say that no, right? It's not just that the Isha She'eino Hogenet Lo is someone who's aser to you. And it's not just that it's someone who's going to lead to an iser, but that there is something about marriage that makes it that marrying the right person is intrinsic to the mitzvah of marriage itself, right? That it somehow affects the mitzvah of marriage itself. And within that, you could take it in different ways. So in what way might you think that marrying the proper woman, taken in the more expansive way, right? Not just someone who's not usher, right? But someone who's like right for you and fits you, right? Spiritually. Why might you say, right? In what way would you say that is not just, right, avoiding an Isser in the marriage, and not even just avoiding other Isserim, but is somehow fundamental to the nature of the mitzvah. So here you could take different directions. One possibility would be to say that it's connected to the itself is a function of the connection between marriage and procreation, and the recognition that procreation isn't just about having children, but about having children that you can raise properly. Now, I know in a footnote here, it's hard for me to call him Rabbi Rosenzweig because Rabbi Rosenzweig to me is his father, right? But for you, I'll call him Rabbi Rosenzweig. Okay, but it's very hard for me. You should just know that because, like, his father to me, like, I was in his father's chair for 3 years, and he was a Rosenzweig. And if it wasn't his father, it was his grandfather who was also
yeah.
Right. They were all, like, they're all Rabbi Doctors Rosenzweig, all of them.
Oh my God.
Like, his grandfather was a professor in NYU, his father is a Rabbi Doctor, and he's, as of right now, Rabbi times two, Doctor times two.
He has
two smichas, two doctorates.
What are doctorates?
Philosophy and Jewish history. But it's still very hard for me to call him
Rabbi,
because that's his father to me. But one possibility is that, and this is a very large sugya in general, but to the extent that Kiddushin is connected to Puruvu. And point two, the extent to which Puruvu is not just about having children, but having the right children. So, for example, the Taj Bates says this, and this source Itamar showed me many years ago for the first time. We were both in the gym.
At YU.
Like, in the gym. And he was like, he was either doing push-ups or lifting weights or something, and he's like, Ziring, I need to show you this Taj Bates. And the Taj Bates argues right, the Taj Bates argues that the Gemara says there are two things for which you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah. Right? One is to learn Torah, and the other is to get married.
As in use the money from?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So the Taj Bates says why. So first he says maybe they're just both very big mitzvah. But then his second answer is maybe they're the same mitzvah. Because the point of both is to ensure the continuation of the Torah, right? We learn the Torah to make sure it continues, and we have children to educate them in the way of the Torah. And these are actually intrinsically related, right? Which, of course, very much highlights the fact that Puravu isn't just about having kids, but it's about having kids so that you can raise them in a certain way that's actually definitional to the mitzvah. So you take something like that, and you think that Kiddushin is linked to Puravu in that way, which, again, is very complicated. Somehow, obviously, marriage and Puravu are related, but how intrinsically connected they are is a little bit complicated and a share for another time. But assuming some level of connection and some level of Puravu being about more than just having kids, so then what the Meiri says is somewhat reasonable, which is, Ra'ui la'adam, shizaher b'nisuin, shistadel v'yitrach v'bat zug, miucheset u'bar avot, m'bnei sheteva hal toladot, nimshach echrei teva hamolidim. So you should find a good spouse because children follow their parents. Yoter leteva imahot v'kolonuzi yishesheno genet l'shem mamo and avin lo banim shenem uganim. So you marry the wrong person, right? Because whatever, she's rich, but she's the wrong person. The children will be like her, and that's a problem, right? It's a lack in Puravu. And the Miri says the same thing on Daf Yud in Brachot. If you guys remember Agadata last year, we did the Agadata of Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu. Right, where Chizkiyahu didn't want to have kids because he said, I see Benevua, that my kid is going to be terrible. It's going to be Menashe. And even though, right, in the end we reject it, right, that doesn't potter you. It doesn't exempt you just because you know the future. It doesn't change the fact, he notes that it doesn't change the fact that obviously, Mikom Kom Yishtadel B'Zivugo, right, the fact that he was willing to go that far, we don't rule like him. Right, I mean, he was wrong. In the end, he has to get married. Right, but the fact that he was willing to not get married, to not have the wrong type of child, shows you that you should search out the right type of spouse to make sure that you have the right type of kids. Right, the fact that there's even a havamina. So in that sense, you could say that these obligations are all about Puravu. Another possibility is that it is, no, it's a Hilchot Deot question, as it were. Right? Again, so you can say that it's not that you don't get the mitzvah, right? You should do your best. Right? But here, you're not doing your best. You're going out of your way to marry someone who's not proper.
No, but he knew that it was going
to happen. Correct. But you still, right? So then you have to deal with it. Okay, but formally, he's still supposed to get married. He did the best he could. He married, right? According to the Gemara, he ends up marrying Yishayahu's daughter. Right? Like, he did the best he could, yeah. Right? But Menashe was still Menashe. So you're supposed to do the best you can, right? A second possibility is that it's a lack in just Hilchot Deot. Like, just we said, like in the Hilchot Talmud Torah, like, you're supposed to be a good person. Well, you're supposed to marry well, right? Like, if you marry the wrong person, it's just like, you know. But the third possibility, and this is what, how about I just call him Reb Itamar? Is that okay? Is that okay?
Sure.
Wants to do? It's so hard for me. Like, this is the problem. When you go to smicha, all your friends have smicha, right? All your friends have smicha. And especially, like, the hardest for me is my friends.
Whose fathers were
who, right, who I know their fathers as rabbis. Because then, it's not just that, like, I'm not used to them being rabbi. Is that when I say those words.
I think of their
correct. So, like, I had a few people my year in yeshiva. So, like, Itamar Rosenzweig, whose father and grandfather were rabbis, Rosenzweig. Or my first year all in Gush, and then my first year in YU, I was with Tuvia Brander, and I was Chavrusas with Tuvia, and like his father, like he's Rabbi Brander, but his father is Rabbi Brander to me, right? Like, so like people like that.
You don't distinguish by calling like one Rav and one Rabbi?
I could try to come up. It's very hard for me though, sure. Right? Like it's just, you can understand, it's very hard. Like,
yeah.
It's a different image in my mind, right? Especially like, okay, now we're like in our 30s, but like, we've been rabbis now for a while, right? We started being officially rabbis when we were like in our mid-20s, and like, you know, that's very, very hard for me to wrap my head around.
Rabbi Ginsberg called you by your name, but like J-O-N, instead of like, that was just...
Yeah, and he's one of few people who, like, I don't really go by that, but okay. Yeah, it was very funny. I was like, okay.
I was like,
okay.
The way he said it in the podcast.
It's the way he talks, which is fine. You say it like it's a dirty word. Like, it's fine. Like, you
no,
think...
I can't say it because it's like
it's not... It is very funny. Like, Aura gets great hana when there's still the people who know me from, you know, many years ago who still call me Ziering. You know, just call me Ziering. Like, you know. You know. And they're like, oh, can I still say that? You know. You know. Some of my friends don't anymore because they're like, we're adults. We go by first name now. You know. And I'm like,
they call you Rabbi John.
No. And like, so some of them have like switched over to Jonathan because like, but which is still sort of weird to me.
Rabbi
some,
Ginsburg says John.
Yeah. I think he got that for my tarot again.
It's okay. You should call him.
No.
Call him Daryl.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. But the third possibility, and this is where is the I think the most interesting conceptually, and this is what Simon already got onto, and this is what I right. Is that what Reb Itamar, okay, whatever, suggests, is that no. Maybe the value of Isha Hogenetlo isn't just a Hilchot question, right? It's not just you're supposed to be a good person and good people hang out with good people, and definitely their spouse should be a good person, and it's not just a Puravu question. But he argues that it's a kiyum of the fact that when in marriage is introduced in Torah, how is marriage introduced?
You're saying
in the Torah.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and what does the pasuk say? Vayomer Adam zot apam etzem me'atzamai basar mi'bisari. Right, Adam says this time, right?
Oh, right.
She's right. It's bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Lezot ikare isha. She's called isha ki me'ish lukagazot because she comes from man, and because of this idea that man and woman come from the same body. Al kein yazov ish et aviv et imo. That's why a man should leave his parents, v'davak v'ishto, and cling to his wife, v'ayu l'vasar echad, and they will be one flesh. Right? The description of marriage is to become one. Now, some of Farshim, like Rashi, say that means to have a kid, and then you're physically, right, you have a child who shares your DNA 50-50. But the Svarno and others, and the Ramban point out, no, it means... It's either about the sexual union or it's about the marriage in general, right? Like they've become a unit. So the Svarno, for example, says, Yazov ish aviv et imo v'davak b'ishto. Why should you do that? Ra'ui shishtadel adam. The person should try. Lisa ishahu genet lo. You should to marry the right type of woman, u'ri'uya lidabekbo, who it's proper to cling to. Gam shistarech lazov et aviv verimo, even if you have to leave your parents. Kilo ye dibuk amiti bivolti domin, because a true, dibuk is clinging, but a new attachment, right? A true attachment can't happen unless people are alike. Avayu bidomin bilvad, ki az yichavnu l'dachad, because then they will intend for the same thing. Vayu levav azar achad, mechavein mechal pulot lazik ashleimut. And they will intend in all of their actions to reach perfection, amechuvan b'tzira adam, which is intended in the creation of man, ki ilu shneihem nimtza echad bilvad, as if they are now one person. Right? Now, based on the Svarno, and he uses that suggestive language from the Gemara of Isha Hugenet Lo, right, he suggests that maybe, right, there's a chiddush that in Kiddushin itself, in marriage itself, part of the mitzvah is to marry the right person, right? The right person. And he says, right, there's, you can see this narratively, right, and halachically in many different ways. So narratively, and I won't get into all the proofs, but he said, look, the fact that Avram goes through such tircha in next week's parsha, and Eliezer puts tests to see, is the wife that he gets not just going to be not Kenani, but share certain qualities with... What? Yeah, for a little Yitzchak, right? Shows that he, like, the right, you put so much effort into making sure that it's the right type of marriage. And he points out that the Me'iri on our sugya, now back to our sugya, says that, yes, that type of Isha Hogenetlo is what is going on with this Bas Kohen Amaretz. So the Me'iri says, Mikol Makom, Bat Kohen Li Yisrael, Talmud Chacham, why does it work about Kohen to a Talmud Chacham? Hadavar Naeum mitkabel shaw kohanim stamon mishtadlim beiske shamayim, because kohanim were involved in God's work. Uvinyanei hora'ah, they were teaching Torah. Uvinotehem yudat betiv tamid chamim, and therefore their children know what it means to be a Talmud Chacham, because kohanim were religious functionaries. Tamid chamim are religious personalities. So a Bat Talmud Chacham, right, will understand what it means to be married to a Talmud Chacham, right? They understand. About Cohen, right? You know, it was, I'm going to say this half in jest, so no one yell at me, right? Right? But I had a friend tell me once that, you know, maybe I won't even say it. Cause it's,
no, say it, please say it. Please
what?
Say it.
Right, he said, like, realistically, forget for a moment, right? This is talking, like, spiritual, right? But he said, like, realistically, in terms of a happy marriage, is also important in terms of expectations. So he said, for example, right, this particular friend is, like, you know, very, very Ashkenazi, right? Limahadrin, Minahadrin, like, very, you know, Ashkenazi, like, modern Orthodox, Ashkenazi, upper middle class, like, you know, whatever, right?
All the boxes.
like, you know, stereotype, like Ashkenazi, yeah, yeah. Like that. And he married someone who's from, a Syrian family, right? And he said, so he said that from his experience, again, the non-scientific study, he said, those type of marriages work. Why do they work? Because he said, look, right? In, like, the culture in, like, the modern Orthodox, upper class, you know, whatever society, is that there's an expectation of some sort of parity, some sorts of equality and sharing the work around the house and child rearing and stuff, right, and stuff like that, right? Whereas in much of the, you know, the, like, the Syrian community in New York, that's just not the norm, right? There's more of a gendered, again, this is why someone get in trouble.
Most places out of America and Europe.
Whatever, right? But he said, but that means that there's an expectation, right, that in that society, women tend, again, this is overgeneralization, but women are doing more of the housework. Now, if a woman from that culture marries a man from the Ashkenazi culture, it can work because, right?
They'll both have their expectations met.
He's expecting somewhat 50-50, so he's doing more work than maybe she's used to growing up, right? And she's used to, like, her mother, let's say, Kilo, doing less. Sorry, doing more. Yeah. And she has to do less. They're both happy, right? But the inverse can be very problematic. Again, this is not to be stigmatizing community. But in a community, right, if we leave out the names, but we just say if, right? If you have a community where the men, right, where the woman expects to only do, right, 50-50, right, because she grew up in a family where her father and mother split the child rearing on the chores, right? But in his family, right, the father was the man of the house and he worked and his mother was home. Again, it doesn't have to be. It happens to be that, right, you know, in this particular, right, that.
You're good. No,
you know, again, right, I should clarify, it's not a better or worse thing. Right, it's that there's that. This is that's my point. Is that it's not a better or worse. Right, if you have a family, my point is that neither type of expectation is better or worse objectively. The problem is when there is a lack of when they're incongruous. Right, that's the problem. Right, so if you have a particular couple where they choose, let's say, right, for example. Right. There was a family, you know, there was a family I knew in Toronto where they flipped it. Right. She was a very high powered career woman and he was also a career man. But she was so much more high powered that it just didn't, like, it made sense for him to be the stay at home dad. Right. Yeah. He said in their marriage, it worked. Right. What was the problem? Culturally, it was hard because there's somewhat of a culture of stay-at-home mothers. There isn't much a culture of stay-at-home fathers. So if you want to bring your kids to the park in the middle of the day,
you're the only father
around, right? Is there anything wrong in their choice as a husband and wife? No. But again, it creates a lack of congruity. The point is that these things are real, right? These things are real, right? That they might not be right or wrong, but there does need to be a certain amount of congruity for them to be able to work together, right? So if you have a, right, and again, look, I don't want to get as much trouble, fine, so I'll just leave it aside, right? Very simply, right? Take a different case, right? Forget, right, the stereotypes, whatever, right? I will tell personally, right, there's some negotiation of the fact that I grew up, right, both my parents worked full-time, right? And in right, combination of the fact that whatever, right, you know, family background, my parents got married later, there's only two kids in my family, right, etc., right? Whereas Aura's family, A, the culture is different in Toronto, right? There are more kids in her family, and you know, they had twins at some point, and twins, you know, as you can see, change everything, right? So once Aura's mother had the twins, right, she didn't work out of the house anymore, right? Like, at some point, she started, like, a gun in the house, right, where the twins were in it, right? And then, like, kept on, but she worked part-time at home and ran a gun, but she wasn't working full-time out of the house, right? So that meant that when Aura and I got married, you have to have a conversation about, well, right, this is what my life looked like until now, and this is what, right, your life looked like. You got to work it out. Like, you need to make sure that expectations match, right? So what Meiri is saying is that, yeah, that's the key to this sugya, right? Is that the Bat Talmud Chacham, the Bat Kohen, because her father was a religious functionary, she knows what that entails, right? In terms of, take your pick, how many hours you devote, the expectation of salary, mm-hmm. right? Like, right, all these things, right? Again, it's not a right or wrong as much as he's just saying, like, they are matim, she knows what this looks like, she's used to it growing up, she married Talmud Chacham, okay. Right? But with the Chiddush of the Meiri is that he adds that it's not just that it's... So you could just say this as I just did in a sociological way. But what the Meiri seems to be implying is the fact that when you don't have that, the marriage isn't a mitzvah, shows that this desire to have congruity between the husband and wife isn't just like good marriage advice. But it highlights that the mitzvah of marriage itself is somehow to marry someone who is, right? And here, right, we can adduce a few pieces of evidence to suggest this more radical thesis, besides what we already did. So, for example, the question of coercion, okay? So, in general, Meikar Adin, you're allowed to coerce people to not marry people that are forbidden to them. Mm-hmm. You're halachically forbidden to them. You're Meikar Adin in the Gemara, you can coerce people to get divorced after 10 years if they don't have kids.
Right.
Right? But there's a very well-known tshuva in the Rivash who says that nowadays we don't do this. Okay? Mm-hmm. We don't do it. Mm-hmm. What?
These people didn't have kids.
Wait, 1 second. Okay? But in the context of, so in the context of the Rivash saying, and we don't coerce, right, he says, and just like I haven't seen people coerce couples to get divorced and they haven't had kids for 10 years, I also said, he says, the Gemara in Kiddushin says, the Gemara in Kiddushin also says you can't marry off your daughter when you shouldn't marry off your daughter when she's a child, even though it works, until she can get old enough to say, I want to marry that person. And I've never seen anyone protest. And the same in our sugya of the Talmud Chacham Am Aretz thing. He says, and if Beitin would do what they're allowed to do by the letter of the law, we'd have to force everyone to get divorced. Right? Now, that's a shocking statement. Why is that shocking?
Because
the Rivash says that why do we not force the Talmud Chacham to not marry the Amaretz? For the same reason we don't stop someone by force to marry someone that's usher to them. Right? Or force the couple to get divorced.
But one is its own.
Well, what I understand, one of them is a formal chiyuv, right? You didn't have kids for 10 years, you have to get divorced. The other, we thought, was like, more hashkafic, and yet the Rivash says, no, the only reason we don't coerce, he doesn't say we don't coerce them because it's not really halachically. He says we don't coerce them the same reason we don't coerce anybody these days. Right? But that implies that he thinks that this is like, right, at some level, at the same level, this is a real... Right? Another proof, and this is a fascinating analysis. See, I'm trying to remember. This analysis sounds is very familiar to me. It's a well-known analysis, but I'm just trying to remember if I ever had a conversation with him about this analysis, which is possible I did, you know, many years ago. It's like some... But So there's a very famous truth of the Maharik, okay? The Maharik was asked whether a father can protest when his son wants to marry a woman, okay? And the Maharik says no. And the Maharik gives two reasons. One is a Kibud Avayim reason, which is that since we paskin that Kibud Avayim has to be fulfilled from the money of the father, right? Like, you have to take care of your parents, but not from your own resources. That shows that, right, your chiyuv is to take care of your parents, but not to give up of your own life. And if you don't have to give up your money, so for sure you don't have to give up your own pain, and to be told to not marry someone is painful, so therefore it doesn't fall under the under Kibud Avayim. And this is actually a very important Maharik in terms of limiting it, because the Maharik essentially, and the Rama paskens this way, that Kibud Avayim is not about your parents telling you what to do. They can't tell you how to live your life. It's about that you honoring them, but they can't control your life. That's not under the rubric of Kibud Avayim, right? The things that relate to your fundamental life is not within the auspices of Kibud Avayim. But the second reason he gives is that there's a Nidnud Avera, right? A parent is never allowed to tell you to do something which is sinful, and there's a Nidnud Avera. Now, I'm just going to add a little bit to the analysis that he has here. But what's the Nidnud Avera? So he says, well, the Gemara says that us in Kedushin, Asur Ladam Shikadesh Yidisha Achi Yirana, you're not allowed to marry a woman until you see her. Shemet Titkana Alav, because maybe she'll be ugly to you, right? And then you'll violate Vahavtal Re'echa Kamocha. Now, what the Maharik seems to see in this Gemara is that you can't marry someone who you're going to end up hating. Now, if you're very careful, did the father tell the son to marry someone who he didn't like? No.
He said,
don't marry this person you do want, right? Which theoretically leaves open the possibility of marrying like your second choice or third choice, right? But the very fact that he's telling you not, he says it's not an avera per se, but it's a nidnud avera. Like, it's sinful enough that it falls out of the rubric of Kibud Avayim. But what that indicates, according to Maharik, is that he understands that when Chazal said you can't marry someone until you see her because you might not like her, right? That's not just, like, advice. Like, that actually is telling you that the obligation to marry the woman that you want, right, and who you're going to be happy with, is actually a chiyuv. And to tell someone to not do that, to marry someone, right, is sinful. Right, it's lacking in the mitzvah, or it's problematic.
But it's still not an avera.
He said nidud avera, right? It's like, again, but the point is that he sees marrying the person who's proper for you, that you want to marry, as part of the mitzvah, and therefore to tell you not. Again, presumably the reason he says it's a nidud avera is because he's not telling you to marry someone you hate. Right? He's telling you not marry, you know, someone, which again leaves open the possibility that maybe you'll find someone better tomorrow, or you'll, right? Whatever.
That's what our Gemara is doing, but it's still not. Like, I don't see how something that's not.
Fine, but the point is that you see already in the Maharik's analysis that he does seem to think that the idea of marrying a person who's going to be good for you and that you're going to be happy with integrates into the mitzvah itself.
That's important to me, yeah.
Right? Another possible nafkamina he notes is there's one of the brachot that we say. At the Sudot is Shasimcha Bim Ono. And the Sefer Hasidim says that you don't say the bracha of Shasimcha Bim Ono at a problematic wedding. And he includes that an Isha Shena Hogenet Lo. You don't say Shasimcha Bim Ono. Now, why? Right? Why don't you say Shasimcha Bim Ono?
Meaning, we omit a bracha.
One of the brachos Shevrachot. So why not? Meaning, he says you say the rest of them. Shasimcha Bim Ono is that, like, there's happiness in, you know, his abode. So what is he, right? So, now, the Simcha Bim Ono is a fascinating sugya in general. But what he suggests is that the reason is because Shasimcha Bimono isn't really part of the Sheva Brachot. It's a bracha on the Simcha itself. Now, the best proof for this, again, is that Let's say it's after the 7 days, right? So Mikra din the Gemara, let's say it's 3 weeks after the wedding, okay? So let's say David gets married in Mazel Tov. You get married in let's say you get married in the States, okay? And you stay there through Sheva Brachot, but you and your Kala are planning to make Aliyah, but you don't make Aliyah during Sheva Brachot, right? You have Sheva Brachot in Seattle and wherever she's from, and then you stay a little bit, say goodbye to family, and then come here, right? So you come 3 weeks after your wedding, right? And then we decide here at Migdal, we're going to make a celebration for you, right? For the wedding, but we weren't there. We weren't there for Sheva Brachot. So Mikra Din, we don't make Sheva Brachot, but you are allowed to make the Bracha Shasimcha B'mono, right? It's a Bracha on
the
Simcha.
That's the only one it says that you can make?
Yeah, so the Gemara says you're allowed to make this bracha, right? Anytime you make a meal within a certain time frame, but it's a celebration of the wedding, you're allowed to say Shasimcha Mono, which shows that the bracha is on the simcha of the wedding, right? It's not as formal. It's a reflection of the simcha. But but based on that, why would you say Shasimcha, right? So why wouldn't you say it in this problematic marriage? Right, so he says, well, they are happy, right? But maybe there's something lacking in the simcha that you have on this union because it's problematic. And if you think that, right, that the marriage is somehow itself affected by marrying an isha, right, a woman who's ena hagenet, then the simcha, the marriage is lacking. It's like, right, mitzvah simcha at some level because there's a lack of congruity in this union. And that's why you wouldn't say specifically this bracha. The other ones, I mean, technically it's still a marriage. There are some nafkamina that are complicated that come up famously in the Ran in terms of nidarim, where we actually have certain leniencies in terms of nidarim, where if like a woman promised that she wouldn't get married without permission from somebody, and then whatever, that person dies and whatever, and now how do you fulfill it? It's possible that, right, if she's going to lose out on marrying the proper person, we say, well, it's if you made a neder against a mitzvah, right? And therefore, I'm going to skip this one, Vadaita Dehachi Lo Nishba. But now coming back to our sugya, right? So now if you understand... Right, so now I'll just take you back to this conclusion, right? Because we've gone a little over an hour, so let me bring you, right? So let's bring it back. Home. Right, so again, let's review from the beginning, right? What we said is that to understand the sugya, you need two things, right? One is, why shouldn't a Talmud Chacham participate in it? One possibility is just like the rules of a Talmud Chacham. The other is that, no, there's a rule that he shouldn't participate in a suda, which isn't a mitzvah, and this mitzvah is somehow lacking. Then we said, okay, but why should it be lacking, right? And then they're getting married. So we said, it's possible that the mitzvah to get married to the right person is, again, just one of these, like, Derech Eretz things. You're supposed to get married to the right person, right? Second possibility we noted is that, right, is that it's inherent in the mitzvah, and that we said in two ways, right? Either from the vantage point of Puruvu or from the vantage point of the marriage. To figure that out, we went to the broader sugya of Isha Shein Ogenet. Now, we saw that according to some Rishon, Isha Shein Ogenet is specifically someone to whom it is usher to get married, right? We saw others who said it's suffolk, right? Yeah. Step removed. But then we saw some who said, no, that's not what it is. So some said, okay, it's not that it's usher to get married, but there is an isser involved, right? Like, she's going to lead you to violate Nida. So the marriage itself is not problematic, but there's an isser down the road, right? Then other people said, no, it's more fundamental than that, but focused on Puruvu, right? Which is, Puruvu is not just about having children, it's having the right children, and making sure you have the right union is going to make sure that happens. But then we raise the final possibility is that no, maybe the mitzvah, the value of Isha Hugenet, and of marrying the proper spouse, is actually inherent to the mitzvah, building on the psukim of Al Ken Yazov Isha et Aviv et Imo V'Davak B'Ishto, the idea that definitional to marriage is this congruity that allows for a union, right? And if there's a lack of congruity spiritually, whatever it might be, then there's something lacking in the marriage. And we noted that Meiri seems to say that, right? And that's why he says, yeah, the reason that it's good for a bat kohen to a Talmud Chacham is they both understand what it means to be spiritual functionaries. And we saw that if that's the case, then maybe the reason this isn't a mitzvah, right? The reason it's problematic to be part of the Suda is not because it's just wrong for you to be this type of meal. It's because when there's a lack of congruity, the marriage is problematic. And that's why it's not an amaretz to an amaretz. Amaretz to amaretz, even though on the level of like derech eretz, like is this a good meal for a Talmid Chacham to be at? It's worse. But in terms of participating in the meal, there is congruity, right? And if the problem is the lack of congruity, then that's why it's specifically these cases. And then the proofs we brought are, right, the fact that Rivash entertains the possibility that in principle you should be able to coerce someone not to enter in such a union, right? The Maharik, who says that it overrides Kibbut Av Eim to marry the person that's proper to you, that you want to marry, right? Things like that, which point to the idea that this is intrinsic and definitional to the marriage itself. And based on that, he says, well, now we can come back and say, if the Isser of the Kohen, of the Talmud Chacham participating in the meal is you can't be part of a mitzvah, of a meal which is not a mitzvah. So then you'd say, well, how is it not a mitzvah? Isn't it marriage in the end of the day? Right? So yeah, the Talmud Chacham shouldn't be marrying the Amaretz, but isn't it a mitzvah? Well, the answer might be, no, if you take the radical view that Isha Sheino Genet, that the mitzvah of marriage in its purest form is to marry someone who there's a congruity, right? That there's that they're natural partners, then to marry someone that doesn't exist actually does at some level cut at the mitzvah of marriage itself. It's not that it's a mitzvah of marriage, but you lost something. No, like there's actually something lacking in the marriage itself. And if you say that, so you could come back to our sugya and say, yeah, the reason Talmud Chacham can't participate in this meal is because he's supposed to be involved in meals that are mitzvah meals, and this is not a mitzvah meal. There's something fundamentally lacking because the marriage is flawed, because there's this lack of congruity. You're marrying a Talmud Chacham, Amar Aretz. That union is wrong. That union is, right? Now again, I will just, before I finish, I will note that obviously halacha l'maisa, to figure this out, you've got to figure out what all this means. And that we'll talk about a little bit on Thursday, which is what Talmud Chacham are we talking about here? What Amaretz are we talking about here? Where once you have this analysis, it becomes clear that, you know, in some places in halacha, Talmud Chacham is only someone who knows like a tremendous amount of Torah, right? And it's clear that in this circumstance, we're going to have to take Talmud Chacham and Amaretz much more fluid. Right, because Talmud Chacham isn't going to mean, oh, you don't fit the checkbox of like the Gadol Hador of 1,000 years ago. That's not the point here, right? Because it's about, right, how congruous the families are, how congruous the couple is, right? If you are colloquially what we call Talmud Chacham, right, so someone who cares about Torah and knows Torah, and knows a lot of Torah even, right, that's enough for these purposes, because it's not a question of like checking a formal box. Are you a Talmud Chacham? Checking a formal box, you a Maaretz. It's about, do these families' values and these people's values align? Right? And obviously, this is also going to right, affect what type of Amaretz you're talking about, which we'll see that many people say the Amaretz in this sugya is specifically, definitely the latter part of the sugya, are people who are like anti-Torah. Right? Because you could have someone who doesn't know Torah, but their values are completely in the right place, and therefore it is going to work. Right? So once you have this insight, you'll understand why some of the post-game qualify both the term Talmud Chacham and the term Amaretz in these Gemaras, because it's not the normal formal thing. Amaretz, Talmud Chacham. It's, in this context, it's about the, right, how much they work together, and therefore it's a contextual, definition of the term. So like I said, that is just the brief summary of this. So if you want to read the 38-page article, and see many, 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 many more, sources on it, you can. Okay.